Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You're listening to The Sound of London. This is Londonist Out Loud. I'm N. Quentin Wolfe. We are a location-specific podcast. I'm wrapping our ears around a project which sees Tower Bridge not only become the venue, but also an instrument in a piece of music. To meet this week's guest, my guide took me through an innocuous side door on the southern end of Tower Bridge, and we descended a rickety old spiral staircase into the gloom below.
Hey baby, let me take you down to a place of strange sights and sounds you ain't never seen the like before. Just a stone's throw from your front door. Hey baby, step out of me. See the beats of the air, land and sea. Some creep, some saw. Down the road, jam brand store.
My heart aches for some fire.
Alright, well, let's just get this out of the way. To begin with, the location in which I am standing is pretty ominous. It's vaguely threatening. I'm hoping to have that sense diffused, but I want you to imagine, listener, an enormous dustbin lorry of the sort that has the big wedge-shaped thing that swings down and compresses anything in its path. I'm effectively standing in a giant version of that. Above me is a metal structure whose colours might seem familiar, actually, and this will swing down the 40 or 50 foot high curve of brickwork. Well, I'll leave the rest to your imagination. We're underneath Tower Bridge, and we're hoping not to get compacted. With me is Ian Chambers. Have you witnessed this, by the way? Have you been down here when this comes down?
No, you're not allowed. There's a strict 30-minute evacuation policy before any bridge lift, and even when Ian Rawls of the London Sound Survey was down here recording, he was only permitted to stand on a gantry in order that he wasn't himself compressed by the machinery.
Well, I've given it a pretty negative atmospheric build-up, but we're here more than anything for the sound. And maybe I'll just give you that lead into what we're doing here under Tower Bridge.
Yeah, so we are here for the Baskill Chamber Concerts, which are the first time that any event down here, other than the odd architectural tour, has ever happened. It's happening as part of Totally Thames Festival this year. And it all got underway when I heard the aforementioned Ian Rawls recording of Tower Bridge lifting from the Baskill Chamber. And when I heard it, I thought, well, yeah, it sounds like industrial machinery, as you'd expect, but it also sounds musical. There are these sort of pitches and timbres of brass instruments in there, which is really odd. It must be metal on metal that's just sort of happened over the years. But I thought my first instinct was this just needs presenting as a piece of music, because it is. And then the second, when I sort of started thinking, okay, this is something I'd like to do, was about sort of elaborating it and building on it with real brass so that it blurs lines between who's doing what. So there's sort of three elements in that main piece. There's the recording of the bridge, there's the brass players, and then there's these offstage sounds which we're hearing right now of traffic going over our heads over the bridge, boats going over our heads as well, because we're below the line of the river right now. And all these, sometimes you get dislocated sounds of cormorants and, you know, the odd people. You've got this weird vantage point that you think you'd be disconnected from London here, but you're actually more connected than you are on the street in some way. There's a boat.
This is a redefining of hidden London for me. We're the ones who are hidden.
Yeah, and if you think about it, people aren't aware of this space, first of all, when they're driving over or cycling over or going even through the bridge on a boat, they're not aware of these two spaces, because there's another one, obviously, on the other side, the North Baskerville Chamber. So that's the first thing you've got.
Well, actually, I should jump in just on the engineering side of it and explain that the purpose of this is these are the elbows, effectively. If you imagine sitting in a squatting position and resting your arms horizontally with fingers touching, and let your elbows overhang where you're resting them on your knees each side. So as Tower Bridge raises, your elbows are going to drop down, and it's into the chamber in which we stand now that they drop.
Yeah, so the idea is, because the bascules are the leaves of the bridge that lift up, the idea of having counterweights, these massive 450-ton counterweights on each side, is to make the lifting the bridge as easy and as quick as possible. It used to lift up very rapidly when they had a lot of bridge lifts. It was done very quickly. Now they've slowed it down a little bit, and it's still pretty quick when you see it. So the idea is that these counterweights perfectly balance the bridge, so there's not much lifting involved by the machinery.
Maybe we could come at the project here from behind it and talk about how you got to be doing this. On your website, there are lots of pictures of you. You look like a model maker. You're working with a craft knife and cutting up very small things. What are you doing in those pictures?
Yeah, I'm a member of a group called Langham Research Centre, which is a collection of radio producers, largely from the BBC. And we got together in 2003 at a time when the BBC was rapidly becoming digital, and all these tape machines and tapes that were hanging around with razor blades and chinagraph pencils were about to become obsolete. But at that point, every producer had one, and there was a workshop with a very lovely microphone and effects unit and things like that. So basically, we could do reel-to-reel tape music and music concrete at the weekends. So that's what we did, and we've been going ever since. And so a lot of the small-scale stuff is relating to that, and things like soldering cables, which I'm really bad at. I'm really hopeless at it. We, in the Langham Research Centre, use obsolete technology, essentially, as a sort of framing device, as a creative restriction to make music. So we use things like reel-to-reel tape. Analog radio seems to be obsolete. Sine wave oscillators, as used by the Radiophonic Workshop. And phonograph cartridges from the 1940s, which have been reconditioned, sort of wires recoiled, and we use them for a piece called Cartridge Music by John Cage.
When it comes to images, and we're flooded with images all the time, and I guess I'm thinking particularly of a time since the birth of Instagram, we've experienced a lot of vintage pictures. Everywhere you look, there are filters to make your pictures look as though they come from insert decade from the 20th century here. What about in sound? Is there any similar fashion?
Well, you've got, on the one hand, the rejuvenation, I suppose, of the Radiophonic Workshop as a sort of online project curated by Matthew Herbert. So that's one example. And also the old dudes from the original Radiophonic Workshop do these gigs where they sort of restage things like the Doctor Who theme for an audience. So those are a couple of specific examples. And then there's obviously Langham Research Centre doing live music concrete using tape machines, places like Café Otto in London. You've got groups like HowlRound, who have just been supporting this guy William Baczynski on his UK tour. So they also use massive long tape loops as part of their stage act, with multiple tape machines going around. And
so they are actually playing them from the tape machines as well?
Absolutely. And what's interesting to me is the goodwill that audiences have towards this machinery. It's like, A, it's a reminder of the past, which they didn't really want to have erased or to move on from. Yes, they're very clunky, these machines, and heavy, but there's something about them and their personalities which is simultaneously charming and unreliable, and I think those are qualities that we quite like these days.
Isn't there a bit of marvel as well in those situations where you've seen those objects before and maybe never actually had the opportunity to interact with them? It seems to defy what your expectations, and this can happen.
Yeah, and also there's that brilliant thing which is that young children, I've got a 5-year-old, and so CDs have skipped them, DVDs, they don't know what they are, iPods they know about, even though they're now obsolete, so they're rich pickings for the Langham Research Centre now. But when you produce a reel-to-reel tape and put it on and play it, they are totally bewitched, because you can, as it were, see the sound moving. You can sort of see the fact that it's going from left to right, and if I fast forward it, you see the sound change, and if I drag it through the tape head with my hand, you hear it go, and you can't do that with, well, you can, but it's very difficult with digits. So there's a certain sort of tactile quality to some of this stuff, which people appreciate, even aside from the rich sound that you get on reel-to-reel tape as well.
The only comparison I can think there is of scratching on decks.
Exactly, yeah, so you get that. And also there's this quite sophisticated software which allows you to sort of manipulate a sort of virtual platter whilst drawing from your hard drive. There's a boat going there.
Sounds like a beast of a thing.
Yeah, I'd say that's not a massive one. That's a medium-sized vessel.
It's a shame. I guess by definition you won't be in here for something enormous going across.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it? I still haven't been in here during a bridge lift on the gantries. I really want to do that because I want to sort of see how it marries up with what I did with the piece of music. And also I really want to get onto the other side to the North Baskill Chamber because in theory the sound will be different. It's 110 years since this place was built, more 120 years, and metal on metal over that time, it will sound different. So there should be another piece waiting for me on the other side.
The prospect of observing from the gantry is no less intimidating to me than being down here and seeing the same thing coming towards you. If you imagine standing about 1 foot away from a cruise liner going past you, that must be the effect.
There's a safety trough here in yellow in case you get caught out and then you can jump in here and you'll be protected.
Oh, that's a safe place, is it? There was a little alcove on the back wall there that I had marked out.
Good. And if there was a full bridge lift with Her Majesty coming through, because she's the only one that is accorded a full bridge lift, then the bridge would swing down to within about 20 centimetres of your face if you were standing on that back wall.
I may need to go on a diet. So the sounds of the bridge intrigued you. And by the way, we've had Ian Rawls on the show before. His project is, his ongoing project is quite incredible. And it's an amazing thing that gets overlooked, I think, that there are sounds. You've talked about the means of delivering the sounds becoming obsolete, but the sounds themselves are also transient. And what you hear 10 years ago might not be what you're hearing now for all sorts of reasons. So just think about mobile ringtones.
Yeah, absolutely. And things like, you know, the old Routemaster bus is ting ting, you know, that on that cord. You know, you don't get that anymore. Hang on, another boat. And just things like, you know, you were cycling along the Regent's Canal and formerly, you know, the slabs went buddle, 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 buddle as you're cycling over. And now the buggers have concreted them in. So things like that are becoming obsolete. So it's just, and you know, you get squeaky gates which have a nice sort of, and then some bugger comes along and oils the hinges. So things like that become, you know, obsolete as well very rapidly.
What about the venue? Well, it only becomes a venue later on, doesn't it? Earlier on in the process, it's an inspiring sound and it's something to experiment with before it becomes a venue. What about other inspiring places? And I've got in mind somebody I interviewed who was into, quite literally, enormous storage drums buried in the ground somewhere like Hungary, I think. He liked to go down there and make sound and record sound. What other sort of places have you tried?
Yeah, well, I've read about some of these aforementioned big reverberation chambers in a book called Sonic Wonderland, which documents them, and they do sound amazing. You know, things like sort of like a 1 minute 15 reverb time, which just sounds impossible, but so things like that would be great to explore. Other things I've done include, I have documented the bike bells on the Regent's Canal, for instance, at rush hour commuting time. So you get all these different tones of bike bells, and you get people without a bike bell going woo-hoo or ting ting, you know, sort of making their own versions of the sound, which is quite good. So I've made a piece out of that. The bus garage in Bow is quite good because you've got a lot of sort of ill-maintained vehicles with very screechy brakes, which if you pitch those down 8 octaves, you get this kind of amazing crystalline music, which just again sounds fully formed, and the same way the Tower Bridge sounds fully formed. There's an interesting project I did in Oslo as part of this amazing thing called Musicity, which is a sort of way of planting sound in actual locations which you can access through a smartphone app. And I was asked to do something which would go on the roof of the Opera House in Oslo, which is like a sort of big iceberg of a building on which you can walk, so you can climb up it onto the roof. And my piece was going to be sited there. And so these sound engineers recorded back room spaces in the Opera House, so places that aren't accessible to the public, and that was my raw material to make a piece. So that was quite interesting, sort of making some of that backroom space available to people on the roof. It just sounded quite an enticing prospect. So I've since been there and heard it on site, and it's wonderful. It just sounds so interesting, you know, transposing a space that's hidden into a public place. And I guess that's kind of what we're doing here. Not only are we allowing people to hear the sound of the bridge, but we're also bringing them in some numbers which they can't normally do.
But I guess what I'm realising as we talk is that conventional platforms, literally conventional platforms for performing music, just really ain't going to cut it with something this, I guess experimental's the right word. It doesn't need to be niche, but it certainly ain't mainstream. And you would have to imagine that a mainstream audience expecting 3 to 6 minutes of poppiness, they're not going to get what they're looking for here. So it feels on the one hand as though your experimentation with the spot and making the sound work with the place goes hand in hand with the need to find the right place to perform it.
Yeah, and with this space, obviously you cannot deny all the offstage sounds. You know, just while we're talking, we're hearing them all the time. So you have it's a very simple decision. Do you say, oh, I deny those? you bring them in. So all the four pieces, three of which I wrote for this concert, all embrace the sort of environmental sound and they become part of the music.
How out of control can that get?
Well, you've got things like, obviously, sirens and very big boats going past, which totally excite the space and make it sort of vibrate. You know, you've got a lot of water surrounding us here, and obviously that just sort of transfers the sound very, very well. So you don't have much control over that, but I like that because I've just sort of built that into the pieces. So the first piece that we'll hear in the concert, this fanfare that I've written, is about sort of 40% silence, so it's just to allow the sound from the brass players playing very right at the top from the gantries of the chamber to allow that sound to decay, and so the audience is almost listening to the space as much as they are the musicians, which I like.
Well, we've got some samples of your work that we can take a listen to. What are we going to hear?
So let's have a listen to that fanfare, which is called Hocatus Prima.
Thank you.
So that's Hocatus Prima. It's a fanfare that I've written for this space and for these concerts. And the idea of it is really to have sort of blocks of sound which are being sort of mixed by the audience who are sat sort of 15 metres below the players. And there's two trumpets on one side and there's two trombones on the other. So even they aren't really hearing the ensemble together. Only the audience is really hearing that mixed down on the floor of the Basque Chamber.
This runs the risk of being an idiot question. When you work so much of the time with sound, what's your relationship in a non-work sense with silence?
I think, obviously John Cage established quite clearly for everyone that silence is impossible and sort of highly subjective. You know, if you're in a very quiet place, you're going to hear your nervous system and the blood rushing through you. So silence is impossible. So it's all relative, and it's just about sort of starting to think about what you want to do in terms of treating the sounds around you as some sort of musical quality or not.
Now, what was that we were hearing?
That sounded like it could even have been a horn on a lorry or something, but it might have been a boat. It was quite high pitched for a boat. They're normally lower.
We can rule out a seagull, I think.
Yeah. Unless it's got perfect pitch.
Or is playing a trumpet.
Don't rule it out.
I wondered whether you find yourself craving a noiseless musical instrument-less situation as a... You know those delicious spicy meals where you eat something that's cool and bland in between courses to refresh? Yeah, precisely.
Yeah. It's funny because one of the pieces that's been performed is John Cage's aria in these concerts. And again, that's the soprano following a graphic score. So there's bits of operatic arias being sung and there's these kind of non-musical sighs, shouts and laughs and things like that. But then there's also a lot of silence. And it's very interesting because when people are listening to that in the space, they're sort of aware that it's silent insofar as she's not singing at that point. But clearly it's not silent in this place because we've got loads of things going on. So it does sort of make you question how you're dealing with silence or how you're categorising it. I would argue that there is no silence, certainly not here.
I think you just recently had the first run-through, and we'll talk about how that went, but very specifically on the issue that we were talking about there, how did people in the audience react to that moment?
They were sort of captivated, actually. We weren't sure if there was going to be any applause in between the pieces because we weren't sort of queuing it up like that. And as it happened, there was a sort of real intensity. So people were perceiving the four pieces of the concert as sort of one work almost. And then at the end, there was this sort of outpouring. So it was very interesting. On that specific point of the John Cage with the silence there, they just didn't know what was going to happen. And she was sort of invading their personal space a little bit, coming quite close up to them. So you get that brilliant thing when you're watching this as the third person, see this sort of rictus grin on the audience faces.
Yeah, this is interesting, actually. I didn't realise how much it's reminded me on the several occasions I've been here of an amphitheatre. It's got a natural performance audience relationship built into it.
Yeah, I mean, the normal thing to do would be to have the audience on these massive, very grimy steps looking down to the space where we're talking, but we've flipped it around so that people can see the architecture more. They're seeing the bricks and...
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It sort of makes a bit more sense, like this.
Ah, we're looking at empty chairs. Now, I assume that this was where all the performers were going to working from.
No. So, yeah, well, that's the audience looking up towards the road level on these massive counterweights.
Well, let's talk about this first run-through. Mm. You mentioned before the interview that this time yesterday you were about a bag of nerves. Yeah. What were you worried about?
Primarily getting everything in place and slightly rehearsed before the audience arrived, because we had a bridge lift at the end, so we had to finish on time, otherwise we'd all be crushed. And there was that pressure of time. We couldn't sort of stretch out. So once we got through it and it all worked like clockwork, I was very relieved. And now we know we can do it. We know the movements of people. Basically, during one of the pieces, after the fanfare, two of the brass players who are on one side of the bridge have to go up onto the road, cross the road with their trombones, wearing white boiler suits, down the other side, and then all the way down the steps into the Basque chamber, all during the Sopranos piece. So that's a challenge, but we didn't know whether that was going to work. It worked really well.
We've had a description of the atmosphere of the first run-through as somber from somebody who would like to hear a lot more Bolivian influence in your music.
Yeah, he didn't have any personal bias on that, of course.
What is the general tone you're going for? Is there something you want people to get from the performance?
I wanted it to be mixed, so I wanted the first piece... What is that? I think that's repairs to the pump in the accumulator chamber.
That sounded a lot like a choir sound on a synthesizer.
Yeah. With the concert's four pieces, the first one is this fanfare, which is, I think, quite pleasant, and I'm aware that a lot of the audience coming to this event are not your sort of Huddersfield contemporary music aficionados necessarily. They're coming to see the space, so I wanted to write something they'd like and that would be quite tonal. So that's that. And
what was that about? Huddersfield? I think there's a reference I've dropped there.
Well, the audience for sort of new music, new in inverted commas, contemporary classical, is very different from the audience for these events, which are more of a Londonist event. The people we anticipate who've bought tickets for this are people that are curious about London and London spaces, rather than curious about, you know, what's happening in sort of 12-tone serialism in the post-Darmstadt school of music. So I bore that in mind and decided not to write lots of modernist music and to make it relatively accessible to start with. And then we have John Cage's aria, which is a thing of its own and seems to appeal to everyone in different ways. We performed it at the Tate in October last year, and in front of an audience of sort of 2 and 3 year olds. It was a family festival. George Osborne was there with his family, and even he liked it. So we thought, well, there's definite hope for Musique Concrète if you can convince him to enjoy it. The third piece is a piece with soprano and field recordings that I've written, which is very watery on the sound effects side. There's a lot of foghorns and underwater recordings, which make people hopefully feel like they are on some sort of vessel. And then the fourth piece is Basque Chambers, which is the piece written for this space using the brass players and the sound of Tower Bridge lifting up.
We're going to take a word from the sponsor who is looking after us on this show. We'll be back in a minute. I think Tower Bridge needs to get a bit more of a look in. I think we could focus a little bit more on some of the other parts of the bridge and find out what my guest Ian Chambers knows about that. Now, maybe we could get a little bit techie as well. I'm keen to hear about how you make your recordings. But all that in just a second.
We have teamed up with audible.co.uk to offer you a free audiobook of your choice. All you have to do is register for 1 month free trial to claim your free audiobook. There are over 150,000 to choose from. The 30-day free trial means you can choose a free audiobook, which is yours to keep whether or not you decide to cancel in the trial period. And there's more good news. If you trialed the service over 12 months ago, the good people at Audible are giving you a chance to get your hands on another audiobook for free. So sign up at www.audible.co.uk/Londonist.
Londonist Out Loud is free every week. You can support the show and Londonist via the Londonist shop, where you'll find excellent gift ideas, including London postcard t-shirts, the Secrets of the Tube DVD, chunky logo mugs, tote bags, hoodies, the Inspector Sands tea, and the Londonist Oyster card holder. Treat yourself, support us, and share your love of London at londonist.com/shop.
You're listening to Londonist Out Loud. I'm Anne Quentin Wolfe. With me, Ian Chambers. And we're talking about Bascule Chambers music. Every press release I've seen related to this says Ian Chambers, Bascule Chambers, brackets, no relation.
Yeah, my long-lost son, Bascule. It'd be a good opportunity, wouldn't it, for naming someone, I think.
Bascule Chambers.
Yeah.
Kind of works. I think he'd be Sherlock Holmes's arch enemy.
Absolutely, yeah. It's like Mycroft, Sherlock and Bascule.
What's your knowledge of Tower Bridge like?
Okay, so I know that it's a special bridge because it's three types of bridge in one. It is a suspension bridge, it's a bascule bridge, so it has the leaves that lift up, and it's a girder bridge, so the high walkway serves a structural function. And so that's unique, I think. It was built in around about 1890. The competition for it was mysteriously won by the chair of the competition, who happened to be the city architect at the time. I think that might have been Horace Jones. So, you know, there was no insider trading or insider knowledge going on there at all. And then I think John Wolfe Barry was the main engineer that came up with this specific realisation in an engineering way of how this was going to work. And we're seeing these big grooves on the side in the Bascule Chamber. Apparently these were not relating to the way that the bridge operates. This was probably, when they were building it, they had to lock these bascules in position. So that's why there's this kind of weird groove going, or scar going down on either side. That's what they think it's all about.
Well, they chuck some girders across there or something to lock it up.
Yeah, yeah, while they're building the chamber around it. So it's kind of, you could just imagine seeing it from this position below the Thames as they're trying to assemble this huge amount of bricks.
Have you explored the experience on that see-through walkway? Have you had a chance to get up there?
No, not yet. I'm saving that. I want to do that, and I want to do the North Bascule Chamber, and ideally I want to see it from within when it's lifting up. I don't know if that's going to be possible.
You've got no chance of doing it. I'm sure you've heard this story as well. The TV film crew who got permission to do some filming down here. And like you said, if there's a ship coming and it needs to get through, then there's half an hour clearance each side. And I believe ships can request the bridge be open for them with just about an hour's notice. It's very short. And this film crew are down here, and they've unpacked all their rigs and their lighting, and they've laid their wires out, and then the call came down, you've got to clear out, there's a ship coming, so pack it all up, out they go. And they unpacked and repacked, and I gather they got about half a minute's filming done on the day.
Yeah, it's kind of Kafka-esque, isn't it? It's brilliant. I love it. They're quite strict about not having people down here while it lifts up for obvious reasons.
Let's talk about the technical. Oh, by the way, I'm impressed with your tower bridge.
Thank you.
That was...
You've probably plumbed the depths of it now.
Huh. Well, I can't work out whether that was an appalling joke. I think it might have been.
Yeah, I
ashamed lookers.
I should tell you about the counterweights. That they're 450 tons on each side, and there's a lot of pig iron involved as well. So this is sort of massive hunks of metal that can't really be moved out now, even when they're no longer functioning. So in the machine room here, there's the old steam machinery which used to power the bridge, which is sort of British built and going nowhere, and they can't really take it out anyway. And then there's a sort of Bosch 1970s German machine, which is a hydroelectric thing that actually powers the engine now.
Yeah, I'm going to go for the cheesy thing here. What powers your engine in terms of inspiration? In terms of inspiration, what is it that fires you up and gets you thinking?
When I hear a space...
Actually, can I say, rather than think... This is a sincere question.
Yeah.
Rather than saying thinking, it may well be that you feel the music instead. Which part of your body does the music work in?
Yeah, I think what happens is that you hear a space, well, for me, a space or a location, and I think, that's interesting. I'd like to sort of put it under the microscope. So I record it, and then I'll generally sort of pitch it down a bit or slow it down so that it's almost like getting it in finer detail so I can sort of see what's going on or hear what's going on a bit more.
So this is an intellectual inquiry going on?
It's a sonic inquiry. So it's a bit like, you know, Messiaen, who loved birdsong, and so he would sit in the forest and try and transcribe it at pitch, you know, at the normal pitch, which is, must be impossible. So generally people would record it and slow it down. If you ever do this, if you slow down birdsong, it's still extremely complicated, even at, like, you know, quarter speed or an eighth speed. So I tend to do that a little bit, recording stuff and then pitching it down and trying not to lose the feeling of what it is. So if I'm pitching down, you know, a lorry's brakes, I want you to still perceive, okay, it's still a lorry, but there's this sort of hidden or latent musicality there that I'm trying to pull out. without sort of pulling the wool over your eyes. I'm not trying to say, haha, listen to this new synthesizer. I'm trying to make sure that you know that it's a location recording, but there's this kind of musical material that you can tease out underneath it.
The way you're describing that reminds me very strongly of a show we did at the Royal Veterinary College, and we went into a room where a lot of students were dissecting various, well, roadkill, I think, foxes and dead cats and so forth. But by doing so, each one was attempting to reveal a different part of the animal in question. So it might be that they were laying the circulatory system bare, or they might be trying to expose particularly the liver in some way. It sounds a lot like you're a sonic anatomist.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's a sort of interesting thing to do, because a lot of these sounds, people aren't really paying any attention to them, and when you start paying attention to them, then suddenly you're aware of all the sort of vicissitudes and variety that you get. Just talking about boats, for instance, you know, I'm no boat fan, certainly not when they put bridge requests in around the concert series, but when you start paying attention to the different sounds of each boat, then you become a connoisseur, and anyone can do this, and you just start thinking, yeah, that's a tugboat, and you can hear the chains of it, or you can hear a particular engine sounds, and so what I'm saying is that when you start focusing on something, it opens up into a greater variety than you were aware of before. It's a bit like colours. You know, if I said to you, look out for the colour yellow, this particular shade of yellow on your way to work today, suddenly you'd see it everywhere, but only because you're thinking about it, whereas all this stuff is in our sort of peripheral vision or peripheral hearing, but we don't really tune into it. So it's trying to sort of make people tune into some of these sounds which could be considered peripheral.
Okay, so you're finding... trying to avoid using the word beauty, because I'm not sure that that is what you're necessarily finding all the time, but you're finding things of interest.
Interest, exactly.
In these sounds that surround us. On a musical front, are there surprising bits of music that you have found something in that other people maybe are yet to spot?
Well, there's two examples. I mean, one is things like harsh sounds like road drills. So there's a road drill outside my house, and it was right outside my house, and it was doing this really interesting sort of cross rhythms, and each it was almost like every bar was a different time signature, so it's kind of going, it sounded like an Autechre track on Warp Records. So I put a microphone through the letterbox and just recorded it for about 20 minutes. It was totally gripping as a piece of music, and
I just want to experience that moment as your postman.
Yeah, what the hell are you doing? So that's one. And then I have this kind of weird thing where if I hear particular pitches, it kicks off this jukebox that I can't do anything about in my head. So there's a sort of lorry reversing noise which is going do-do-do-do-do-do, and it's the same pitches as this. It sounds a bit pretentious, but it's a Fauré piano quartet or quintet, I think, and it's like the sort of second movement, and it just starts like that at that same pitch. So every time I hear a lorry, I then hear the rest of that piece in my mind, or most of it, and I can't do anything about it. So there's a certain sort of thing where the pitches are triggering memories of other music in my mind.
That's how I always feel about smells.
Yeah, the olfactory bulb, it's just so quick in your brain. You know, you smell something and it immediately transports you to the memory of it without any cerebral dicking around. You know, it just takes you straight there in a way that chairs don't necessarily.
Yeah, that's right. Well, just yesterday I was clearing out a cupboard and there was an LP in there. Not one that I intended to play. It would possibly horrify anyone with taste. But I had a sniff inside, as I hope you do. And instantly I was 7 or 8 years old again and nosing around inside my parents' LP cupboard.
Yeah, I wonder if smell is quicker than sound in that respect. When you hear a snippet of a piece of music that reminds you of something, is that any quicker or slower than when you get that smell of, you know, when you were almost knocked unconscious as a child falling off a slide, you know, because that's something that I sometimes get. And I think sound is probably a little bit slower than smell in that respect, but it'd be interesting to find out, to do some studies.
Another boat going over there. It's a lot busier than I imagined it to be.
Yeah, there's loads of boats, isn't there? You never see them when you're sort of wandering around London, but there's actually a lot of river traffic here. You even see container vessels. So there seems to be one container port left in London, sort of near Cannon Street, I think. And you see a lot of sort of mini container vessels with these things, presumably going out to Tilbury or somewhere like that.
Exactly right. If you'd like a special edition of Londonist Out Loud on what that's all about, just go back into our archives.
Very good, I will.
That was more directed at the listener. I wasn't instructing you how to use your day. But in terms of how your day is going to unfold, what have you got lined up? And we're going to hear a bit of it in just a moment, but what have you got today, tomorrow? Today being Saturday.
Yeah, today we've got two performances with the Dockland Symphonia Brass and the soprano Catherine Carter from within the Bascule Chamber. And we're going to do two performances for press and partners and people like that. Then we've got 12 concerts for the public over the Saturday and Sunday, which are sold out, and I'm hoping that we might do something similar next year and over maybe more days so that we can get more people down here, because there's obviously a big appetite to come and see these spaces. So this is the title track, as it were. This is Bascule Chambers, and we're hearing the brass of the Dockland Symphonia alongside Tower Bridge.
So that was Bascule Chambers. Well, I hope the performances go as well as they promised to do. People want to hear more about you, or more from you, I should say. And also, I think, more from Ian Roars and his amazing collection of sounds. Where can they find out more about both of you?
Yeah, so my website is Ian, I-A-I-N, chambers.com, and you should definitely go to the London Sound Survey site and just put in Tower Bridge, because there's a lot of the hidden spaces here which he's documented, which didn't make it into my piece, such as the machine room and other places like that.
Well, from the Bascule Chamber in Tower Bridge, Ian Chambers, thanks very much.
Thank you.
My heart aches for some far-off place, no one could have left you.
And that's all for this week. My thanks for this week to Ian Chambers. Thanks to Mark Barr and Bernie Barkley. The theme and incidental music was by Ian Chambers and Songs from the Howling Sea. I mean, Quentin Wolfe.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.